This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, welcome into the latest edition of the Show Before the Show podcast, the official podcast of Minor League Baseball. My name is Tyler Munn, joined by Sam Dykstra and Benjamin Hill in New York City. What's going on, dudes? How are you?
Good, Tyler. How are you?
I'm fine. It's snowing here. It's cold. But, you know, that means that we're closer and closer to minor league players reporting to spring training, and we're getting set for that coming up here in the next few weeks. And, you know, it's a fun time of year in that regard. Ben, what's going on?
Well, you know, every time you say, hey, guys, how are you? That's a cue for either samurai to speak samurai. But every time
we have two samurai actually in behind Sam and Ben, and either of them could have spoken too, but they didn't.
Exactly. Just standing there. And I don't mind that Sam speaks first, but I think it just started that Sam would speak first. And then now I get to the point where I always do not speak and let Sam speak first so that there isn't that awkward, we both speak at the same time.
Right.
Sort of. But having now acknowledged this pattern, I think in the future I might try to sneak right in and say hello to you first before Sam says it.
Ben's trying to elbow me out is essentially what's happening.
Someday we're going to do an episode where I say one of you is there and the other one and I are just going to have a conversation, and it'll be a mystery to the people listening as if the third person is actually there or not. We're going to do some experimentation on things like that. Sounds very fun. We got a lot of fun stuff to cover on this week's episode of the Show Before the Show podcast. Hunter Hornstein from the Myrtle Beach Pelicans will join us coming up in a little bit. We're going to be talking minor league promotions in 2022, and we're going to have some fun with that conversation. But before we do, we're going to have some fun, just the three of us talking about the close of January as we get there, which is coming with a much anticipated rebrand by a franchise in Texas. The Sugarland Skeeters are on the verge of becoming the Sugarland something else. And there is a really kind of quirky and weird and interesting thing going on Sugarland social media, which I was not aware of until Sam sent this to me this morning. The Sugarland Skeeters mascot is Swatson, the mosquito, which, like, you know, you're a mosquito and you have SWAT in your name. That seems kind of dark. But Swatson's just like, he's off gallivanting around the world right now. Sam, what's going on with this?
Yeah. So as you mentioned there, Tyler, we know coming up over the weekend that the Sugarland Skeeters are going to be changing their name. We talked about it before. We're going to get into more detail about the name change once it's actually out there and live, and we can talk about looks and logos and all that kind of stuff. But I just thought this was so funny that because they're not going to be mosquito based anymore, they're not going to be the Skeeters, it seems like they're going to be changing their mascot. But instead of just announcing a changed mascot, they've kind of put him out to pasture. And I don't want to say put him out to pasture or like send him to a farm upstate as if upstate Texas exists, but it's just like such
a mosquitoes. They sent this one mosquito to a farm upstate.
He can buzz around the cows all day long. Instead of just like announcing a new mascot or whatever, or just putting this guy in storage, they've created this elaborate backstory for him. And I don't want to like put the curtain up on this. We can play into it if we want, but apparently he was sent around the world. He got a ticket to travel the globe. His first stop was apparently New York City. I didn't see him, Ben. Did you see him walking around? The picture was from Times Square, which isn't too far from here.
No, it isn't. I did see a gigantic, you know, bipedal mosquito, but I just thought it was, you know, like one of those Elmo type characters you take pictures with.
I was going to say, it's just a standard Times Square character.
That's just another day on the F train for me. But let me just read you his postcard, just because I want everybody to kind of hear this.
In the voice of a mosquito, Sam.
I don't know if I have the buzz in my voice to really make that happen. Just imagine it at home. If you want to play with it with some effects and make it sound like a skeeter, you go right on ahead. To my friends and family, these past few days on vacation have been an amazing experience for this mosquito. I have spent my entire life in Sugar Land, and while it will always be my hometown, it's time for me to start exploring what else is out there. I also discovered the relative that sent me the ticket for this trip, and I am most, M-O-E-S-T, referencing another Sugar Land mascot, Mo, excited about meeting up with him next. I'll get to spend some much needed time connecting with my brother and look forward to our new adventures together. Thank you for all the support and love. I will miss you all so much until we meet again, Swatson.
It's like very emotional.
Yeah, I kind of want to cry, but also it's like a mosquito mascot. That's just like, I will miss you all so much.
There's something about this story that really is hit Sam particularly hard. He said to me today, we really need to talk about this. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, but you know, you have to decide every week what you're going to talk about that matters most. And Sam was like, we have to talk about the mosquito who got a trip around the world that's sending postcards. That's wild.
Listen, we can get to climate change and everything that's, you know, all the issues with the world next week. But for some reason, I just thought this was so funny. And also, like I said, deranged and just weird. And it's going to stick with me, I guess. I might be the only person, apparently.
No, what am I think listening to this, they will have it stick with them as well.
And yeah.
You probably hear from people who say, you know, thank you for spotlighting this issue that the mainstream media was ignoring. Not just the mainstream media writ large, but even the mainstream minor league baseball media.
It's true. My favorite thing about it is the reality when you step outside of the narrative, the reality that somebody was sitting in the Sugar Land Skeeter's front office and photoshopping a giant anthropomorphic mosquito into world destinations. Here is Swatson at the Great Wall of China. Here is Swatson in, I don't know, Petra, Jordan, or Alexandria, Egypt, somewhere, standing in front of big giant carved Egyptian looking, what would those be, friezes, whatever is carved into the side of a rock. Anyway, then there's Swatson on a beach, and it's just like, this took up a substantial portion of somebody's workday, and I love it. I love that.
And the fact that there was a photo shoot for this.
Right. Because they're in the shot where he's on the beach, he's got like a very festive beach hat and like a Hawaiian print shirt on. So it's like, all right, we got to get those Swatson pictures ready for the Photoshop jobs of being around the world. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. In the New York City Times Square picture, he's hailing a cab.
Right.
Again, it's just not like a shot you have around the ballpark that we're going to take out of a picture we have and put it. It's like, no, he's got a bag and he's pointing to cabs, which are all going the wrong way. So I don't know. He has some New York City things to learn.
Yeah, he's still in the learning process. But big stuff is coming up from the Sugar Land Baseball Club this weekend. Saturday, they will be unveiling the new identity, and we are excited to bring you all of that coverage at MILB.com. And with that, let's talk a little bit of ballpark, guys, before we dive into our interview segment this week. Ben, you've got a latest and greatest newest one up on the site right now. Tell us about it.
Yeah, my most recent addition is Jackson Field, home of the Lansing Lugnuts, and that was a fun one to write. I was there last for the 2018 Midwest League All-Star Game, you know, which is a really unique experience, and you know, it's a unique ballpark, and in writing the guide, some things came back to me. One, really interesting dimensions in this ballpark. You know, it's in a downtown location where, you know, they didn't have a real, you know, a big footprint to work with architecturally in terms of fitting the ballpark in. So it is 305 feet down the lines at this ballpark. And then the whole fence is asymmetrical, you know, with little jutting corners, and they don't correspond on one side to the other. So it's an interesting layout. And though it is 305 feet down the lines, that very short porch is offset by 23 foot high walls. So you don't see a ton of home runs down the line because the ballpark, it starts to widen out fairly quickly. And if you do hit it right down the line, you have a 23 foot wall to contend with. Also interesting in the outfield, and this was something that was built about 5-6 years ago, there is the Outfield Lofts apartment complex. And that is the backdrop for this ballpark, is this 84-unit apartment complex that looks directly out over the ballpark, you know, with interesting colors and distance markers on the building. You know, it's 507 feet to hit one side of the apartment complex. It's 400 and some feet to hit a different side. People, you know, who live in the buildings, you know, can watch the games on their porch. So it's just a really unique aspect of that to have this apartment complex looming over the facility itself. And it's essentially on the concourse, this apartment complex. So the concourse level of the complex is not the apartments themselves, but it's new group areas in the facility as well. So it's a really unique add-on to that ballpark. And yeah, so it's an interesting ballpark if you've never been there. Quirky dimensions, quirky architecture, a ballpark loft. I mean, if you really, if you visit Lansing and like it so much, check for availability at those apartments and then you can live there and, you know, just do your own thing all the time. Just, you don't need season tickets. Just go out on your porch and watch a game and, you know, turn friend of the pod, Jesse Goldberg Strassler on the radio and just take it all in. And Lansing, Michigan's capital. And it's right down the street from the Capitol building as well for all you Capitol buffs who like to visit state capitals as part of your road trips. There's the river, there's two rivers, there's a confluence of rivers in Lansing. So kayaking, canoeing opportunities, lots of food and drink and things to do right around the ballpark. And so visit Michigan's capital, check out the Lansing Lugnuts.
If you were owning one of those apartments and you wanted to turn into like an Airbnb or something like once a month, would you include price of tickets just like in your price? Just saying like, hey, you are getting a free baseball game out of this.
I don't think I'd add like $14 because you don't have to pay $14. I'd say like the perk here is you don't have to pay for the game. And I'm not going to pass that cost on to you or that perceived cost. I'm just saying that's a good idea. I mean, that'd be a good Airbnb, especially, you know, sharing the team schedule on the Airbnb listings and say, Hey, you can watch a game. You can listen to Jesse Goldberg Strassler on the radio and you can explore everything the Michigan State Capitol has to offer.
That sounds pretty cool. My latest is not the state capital, but it is the largest city in the state of Nebraska, and that is the Omaha Storm Chasers. And that's actually kind of a lie because Omaha as a franchise does not play in Omaha proper, but they do play in the Omaha metropolitan area. I was talking with Marty Cordero, who is the team president of the Omaha Storm Chasers, and he said, yeah, we're kind of, you know, the New York and Jets and Giants don't play in New York City. They play in a totally different state, but still part of the same area, and they're referred to by the same name. The Omaha Storm Chasers are located in Papillion, Nebraska, which is just about 15 miles southwest of their former home of Rosenblatt Stadium, which is still sort of immortalized. Its infield still exists as part of a kind of an honorary complex on the grounds of the Henry Dorley Zoo and Aquarium, which is a world famous attraction in Omaha. But man, the Storm Chasers have done such a great job. I know there was a lot of conversation when they moved the franchise that was then known as the Omaha Royals into a new ballpark outside of Omaha when the College World Series decided that it was going to be moving into a brand new ballpark as well, which is now known as Charles Schwab Field. It used to be TD Ameritrade Park, new name for this year. But separating those two things into separate stadiums, I think a lot of people had questions about, and the Storm Chasers have really made it work. Warner Park is gorgeous. It is a really cool, clean, open stadium. You walk in directly at concourse level from the parking areas. There's fantastic concessions, a place that has one of the largest berms in minor league baseball, and just everything cool and modern that you would want in a current minor league ballpark. And it's a great place to check out a game. It's a vastly underrated city. Omaha is an awesome spot. And, you know, it's one of those places that I kind of drew in the lead to that story. It is one of the real guideposts of baseball culture in America. You know, there's the Little League World Series in Pennsylvania, and there's the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. And in Omaha, there happens to be the College World Series, which is one of the major stops along the baseball road. And so it's a very cool place to go, and you can check out all things Omaha Storm Chasers at MILB.com/fans/ballpark-guides. And with that, we are set to pivot to this week's interview segment as Hunter Hornstein from the Myrtle Beach Pelicans joins us coming up next.
It is late January, believe it or not, and...
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here on the Show Before the Show podcast, we're thinking about promotions, promotion schedules. What exactly is going to be happening at minor league ballparks in 2022? We've seen a few promo schedules trickle out, but not too many thus far. And myself, Ben Hill, Sam Dykstra, Tyler Maughan, we were thinking, hey, let's come up with some ideas about what we would like to see promo-wise at minor league ballparks. But more than that, we said, let's talk to someone who actually knows a little bit more about this, who actually does it. IRL, which stands, I'm told, for in real life. So to talk to someone who does minor league baseball promotions, IRL, we have from Myrtle Beach, the Pelicans, Director of Fan Engagement, Hunter Hornstein. Hunter, thank you for being here today with us.
No, thanks y'all for having me. Great to be here.
And as I mentioned before, and I'm sure you're aware anyway, it is late January. You know, you play a very large role in putting together the Pelicans promotional schedule. About where are you in that process right now?
We are in the midst of it. we're in the midst of it. I know January is kind of that start of it. You know, once we get back from the holiday break of December, it seems like now we are racing towards the starting line. It's the race before the race, so to speak, or the race before the marathon, I should say. So we're in the midst of it. There's a few things that we're working on that are done. There's stuff that's getting done, and then there's things that probably need to be started right now. So we're kind of all over the map a little bit, but that's the fun part of this. And things are moving, things are happening, and you know, once we get to March is usually when our promo schedule traditionally here in Myrtle Beach has come out. I know there's some teams that have already put theirs out, and that's awesome. For us, it's usually about March. That kind of coincides with the single game ticket sales. So by the time we get there, we'll be ready to rock and roll, and at least what we start with, because as I'm sure everybody knows and understands, that what you start with isn't necessarily what you go through with the season. And sometimes things happen and you pivot or things fall in your lap. And so it's just about getting ourselves as prepared as possible, but we're doing some good work, and things are rolling right along down here.
So it'll be over a month before you reveal your promo schedule, and no spoilers, of course. But are there any promotions that are you're particularly excited about this year, or that seem really fresh or new, or that you think is really going to engage the front office staff in executing it, and you know, excite hopefully the fans coming out to enjoy it?
Yeah, for us, I think we have over the last couple of years really come to understand what our philosophy is down here as far as engaging our audience and engaging the people that come to the ballpark. You know, Myrtle Beach is a little bit different in the sense that, yes, we have our locals and we have our season ticket holders that come out here, but by and large, it is a tourist market, and you have new people and new groups of people coming to the ballpark every single game, every single homestand. And that really offers a unique opportunity to put on a different show or a more exciting show every single time out. So we really have invested heavily in the last couple of years with our in-game show. You know, whether that means getting, you know, nice, super, you know, almost movie quality costumes for our promo team, rehearsing skits and having plants and stuff like that within the stadium, you know, doing actual full stadium activations rather than just a couple of contestants. You know, we've had ourselves, you know, really invest in the experience at the ballpark, whether it's the new lights that you're seeing now popping up around with different organizations. You know, we installed fire cannons a couple of years ago to add to that experience. Even things like more decorations, more balloon arches and things that you, inflatables, That's kind of where we're at now here in Myrtle Beach. We're really about the full immersion show. You know, it's taking a page out of that Disney playbook, where everything is about the experience, and that when you come here, you're going to have fun. Way back when, my very first general manager, when I started, and this was an indie ball when I started, had always told me, you know, the goal should be a family walking out of the ballpark saying, man, we had a great time. We can't wait to come back. Oh, by the way, what was the score? Who won the game? And that's, you know, and that's the case with every team. But we really take that to heart down here, because there are folks that are coming here on vacation, and we are just one piece of their Myrtle Beach vacation experience. So for that night, we're going to be the best piece, and we want to be the best part about their vacation, so they come back year after year. So, you know, promotional wise, yeah, we have some giveaways that we'll be doing this year. We have done the appearances, but for us, it's really about this full immersion. You know, how can we make you feel like, yes, you are going to Dinosaur Night here, or yes, when you come to Derby Eve, it is the Derby. Yeah, it's that kind of stuff. And then on top of that is the community-based initiatives, the Deaf Awareness Nights, the Mental Health Awareness Nights, the Recovery Awareness Nights, you know, where we can really impact our community at a local level, and give back to the people that have supported us over the last few years.
Yeah, and I really like what you were saying there about specifically Myrtle Beach. And I don't think a lot of people think about that necessarily with a lot of these minor league clubs and what you guys have unique there as a tourist city. But speaking more broadly, to kind of step even further back, so much of what we talked about last year was just kind of dress rehearsal and everybody getting back to the minor leagues. Now it seems like everybody's kind of getting their foothold again. In discussions you've had maybe with other front offices or just industry wide, what do you feel like are some of the themes going into 2022 from a promo aspect?
I think you're seeing a lot of like the internet memes kind of come into life a little bit. You're seeing a lot of those topical conversation discussions coming to life. You know, frankly, I'm shocked we didn't see, and maybe we did and I missed it, but frankly, I'm shocked we didn't see a Tiger King style promotion last year. You might see something like that. God forbid we see a Squid Game type of of promotion this season. But when you talk about talking to people within the industry, you know, we have those group chats that, you know, span 4, 5, 6, 7 different teams. And these are people who it never stops for them, right? They have that creative juice going all the time. Something I'm quite jealous of, actually. It always seems like there's something that you can play on, whether that's it's the topical stuff, it's the pop culture, it's things that are happening in the now, and y'all have been around long enough to have seen kind of the progression, the evolution, I think, of promotions in minor leagues, whether it's characters that come out, whether it's giveaways and trinkets and tchotchkes and things like that, but now I think you're seeing a lot of topical pop culture and almost that meme culture kind of come to life at the ballpark, and things that, you know, get people talking, not just in your community and in that market and that ballpark, but also online. I think that's a huge thing too, is capturing that online attention, because it certainly is fleeting. So when you grab it, you gotta try to take advantage of it as much as you can.
Hunter, how do you balance, especially nowadays, the shelf life of things is so short. You know, if you announce a promo in March, by April, people could have forgotten completely about, like, you know, Tiger King is kind of a good example, because everybody watched Tiger King for a couple of weeks. If you were a minor league team and it was a normal world in March of 2020 and you announced, all right, we're doing Tiger King night, by July, I feel like people would be like, oh, right, that show on Netflix that I completely forgot about. How do you balance that these days with how there's such a short shelf life for everything in pop culture, but you have to be able to kind of roll with the things of the moment?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I don't know if there's a perfect answer to that. One thing that we tell each other down here is that if we're not going to be first to the party, you know, you almost, is it worth even trying at that point, right? If this isn't something, like you said, that's relevant in 2-3 months, does that make sense? I think there's a good balance of having certain things that you can always kind of go to the well to, You know, your Christmas in July, for example, that's something that you can, you know, you can go to the well to. So balancing your promo schedule to include one of those, maybe you include a Halloween night because you know that that's going to do well, that the your Pirates and Princesses of the worlds. But then you also have to give yourself that wiggle room because something might pop up, something might happen that you need to take advantage of, or that you wish to take advantage of. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And that was a very roundabout answer to,
I think it's your question. Fair.
But yeah, I think that that's kind of, I mean, that's what a lot of folks are trying to figure out, is what is that balance? Because nobody wants to put something out there and everyone be like, oh, cool, you know, or, oh, that's, you know, 6 months late, you know, and that's the same thing too. When I think the more teams also that get involved in social media, it's that same mentality, right? If you're not on that meme right away, if you're not on that trend right away, you know, it's not gonna happen for you. It's almost better to not involve yourself. The running joke on social is that everything's fun until the brands get involved and the brands kill it. You kind of have to think that way, you know, as a team, right? Is it worth us putting this time and energy and effort into something that may not be received well, or may somebody may be bored with? So yeah, that's a great point. You know, like what's happening right now that we're, I mean, talking about, you know, the whole perfect example, you know, when Disney Plus came out with all of their Avengers things, right? And I know this is different because we have a deal with Marvel now, but you know, if you were to try to do something like that in the summer when all of these shows come out in the fall, you know, what does that make as much sense as if you tried to capitalize on the latest season of Stranger Things that comes out in July or what have you? These are just, you know, throwing out examples, but yeah, that's a great point. And I don't know. I think also you throw it around to the people that you work with or within the industry. That's when you throw it in the group chat. Hey, does this make any sense? And then you hope everyone tells you don't do it.
I think prior to the Marvel deal, somebody should have done like a knockoff brand superhero night where it's just like superheroes that are sort of, you're getting the rights free superheroes.
Yeah.
Like it's not Wolverine. It's like a guy named Badger who just happens to like dress sort of similarly.
The mystery men of Marvel.
These aren't the Avengers. These are the revenge getters.
Yeah.
Sergeant United States.
Pencil Man and Son of Pencil Man.
Admiral North America.
Yeah.
Hunter, is there a promotion that over the last few years, you know, your time in baseball, that you remember either being really excited about and then people showed up and they didn't really get it, or the flip side of that, something that you kind of planned, you know, on short notice or on a whim and maybe didn't throw a lot behind and all of a sudden people show up to the ballpark and they're just nuts for it? Does anything stand out that way?
You know, I think there are, and I'm trying to think how I can delicately put this, so that if by any chance Ryan Moore listens to this, I don't get in trouble.
Friend of the podcast, Ryan
yeah.
Moore.
Yeah, he's friend, always emailing me his thoughts on every episode.
So, and I got to be really careful here because the last time I talked about this, it came off as if I was throwing him under the bus and I had a talking to about that. But we were going to do Glitter Night and I think everyone was pretty excited about it here internally. I think the only people that may or may not have been that excited were our grounds guy at the time, our stadium operations manager, and probably me.
The people who have to clean things up.
Yeah. But everyone else I think was pretty excited. And then, yeah, we went into it and I mean, it was okay. You know, I don't think it was anything great. I think if you're going to do something like Glitter Night and really blow it out, you have to, you know, dump glitter into the stands onto people. And if I would never want to do that for many different reasons. So, you know, we tried to do it as big as we could with, but also fully knowing that, yeah, we're the ones that got to clean this up. So I think maybe that was one, and just more so the internal excitement for it. and then it actually happening, you know, I think people might have been a little, not put off, but I think they might have been scratching their heads a little bit. Either that or one that really was exciting. 2016, we did Bring Your Own Instrument Night. And that one was really exciting. And we were all fired up. I remember I had those thumb cymbals. And I never stopped. Like I looked like the monkey
wind-up toy.
I looked like the monkey doing that. I mean, everybody had either kazoos. Ryan Moore went out to a pawn shop and bought a snare drum. He can't play the drum, but he was hitting on the drum the entire night. You know, we gave out kazoos and wanted people to play them. And you know, Kristen Call had her guitar out and stuff. And that was something that we were really, really excited about. And nobody was pumped. the fans weren't really, it flopped. It completely flopped. You know, the whole idea was that we were going to get high school bands involved. Well, it's summertime. They're not in school. Like it just did not work. It was just a bunch of minor league front office staff members just blowing into kazoos by themselves. But that was fun. That has some good memories from that. Yeah.
Well, you know, you don't know if something's going to work until you try it. And myself and Sam and Tyler, you know, we have some of our own ideas for promotions in 2022. And, you know, wanted to, you know, kind of run those by you. You don't have to, you know, judge them or anything like that. But, you know, it's kind of like as if this was a front office meeting and just pitching ideas out there. So feel free to jump in. If any of our ideas, if you think of something that would add to it, or if you think, no, that's a horrible idea and here's why, but we'll just briefly share a few ideas we had. And Sam, let's start with you.
Yeah. So I had to be true to myself. And initially when Ben and I were talking about this, we were trying to think, Ben, you used to do blog posts on this. What is an anniversary this year? What is something that came out 10, 15, 20, 25, even 50 years ago? That could be turned into a promotion. So I started digging around a little bit and I thought 25 was a nice round number. So I went to 1997 movies, and one of my favorite movies of all time came out in 1997. It came out in December. I think it was wide release in January. So it's a little bit iffy if it's a fit here, but everything I've read is that it's a 1997 movie. So we're going to go with it. It's the 25th anniversary of Good Will Hunting. And now there are several teams around the New England area that could do this. Worcester's an obvious fit. New Hampshire could, Portland could, even Hartford, if you want to go that far out. But I'm just imagining any of those teams for the night rebranding as the, say it all together, the Apples. So then everybody can come in and start yelling how you like them Apples.
Now, wouldn't the team just be them Apples?
It could be them Apples. There you go. That's what would be on the jersey. It would be them Apples going across the chest. We could maybe get the Fort Wayne Tin Caps involved somehow. They obviously have an apple component to their hat. I don't think the people of Fort Wayne necessarily have the same ties to Good Will Hunting that I or many New Englanders do, but hey, we can go with it. I was trying to think of like, who can we get out to the ballpark? I don't think we could get Matt Damon or Ben Affleck unless, in Matt Damon's case, we involve crypto.com somehow. Ben Affleck seems busy on multiple projects. Stellan Skarsgård and Minnie Driver, again, probably too big. But some of the other people involved, Cole Hauser, he was like the other guy in that crew. There was Casey Affleck. Again, Casey Affleck, probably not going to get him. But there was that crew with Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and Casey Affleck. Cole Hauser was the other guy. Seems gettable to me. I would hope somebody would have the walk-up song of Miss Misery by Elliott Smith. Maybe we play it as everybody's leaving the ballpark. That is obviously the song that Matt Damon's character, Will Hunting, is playing while he's driving down the West Pike West to go to California. And the other idea, or two other ideas I had for this real quick, as anybody remembers, Matt Damon says he has a bunch of brothers. I always get a kick out of when minor league teams have this promotion of, if your name is so-and-so, you will get discounted tickets or free tickets. So these are the names of Will Hunting's brothers. Whether it's true or not, we never quite know. But
there was a time in my life when I could recite this.
Do you want to try it, Tyler?
No. Tommy, Ricky, Davey, Bobby. I don't remember.
I wrote Johnny it down.
And Brian is how it ends.
Yes. It's Marky, Ricky, Danny, Terry, Mikey, Davey, Timmy, Tommy, Joey, Robbie, Johnny, and Brian. And I will do it again, as Matt Damon does in the movie. Marky, Ricky, Danny, Terry, Mikey, Davey, Timmy, Tommy, Joey, Robbie, Johnny, and Brian. If you have any of those names, which I grew up with a lot of people who have those names, you can get 50% off tickets. We're going to have to do this on like a Tuesday or Wednesday, something in the middle of the week. So we're not just giving off 50% off tickets to elite games. But yeah, that's in terms of anniversaries, I think that could hit a lot of nails on the head. And I just want people yelling how you like them apples to the opposing team, the opposing dugout and bullpen and all that kind of stuff. So Ben, yours is similarly Hollywood themed, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, related to yours, you know, maybe you couldn't get Matt Damon out there, but you probably could find someone named Matt Damon, just somewhere.
Yeah, that's what I was members of say.
The Damon
just
or Affleck find, family might be able
just
to
find it. People like find it. Does he have like a second cousin? And just be like, we didn't get Matt Damon, but his second cousin twice removed pizza delivery drivers here. Like this guy once had a class with Matt Damon. He's going to so ask some questions about it when he was in school or something like that.
Just right. Yeah. We could just get
here ridiculous like that.
Go to the game. One other thing I wanted to throw out real quick. I actually forgot it. I was going to have speed dating in the corner. You know, just set up a site somewhere, you know, in the, if it's in Worcester over by the Worcester Wall, they have some nice tables set up over there. Just so you could say you both went to the game, unlike Robin Williams' character in the movie, and you went to see About a Girl. So there you go. That's
all very good. It's all very good.
Could you do class? What is the class in the classic bar scene, the My Boy's Wicked Smart scene where he's saying, you know, you learned that in your, was it geology or archaeology? What is the class that they're talking about?
It's a history class of history. Some kind. Going to come back you in should, here regurgitating Gordon Wood.
Yeah.
You I don't know Gordon do, Wood do a, is, but you can see if you can get Gordon
do
Wood
a
out.
Do a pregame history class or something for fans.
Or if like, well, his point in that scene is to say like, I got the same education you did.
Yeah, anybody like have
with some, $1.50 in late charges or the public
yeah,
library.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So if you bring your library card.
Yeah, like you could waive people's late charges.
More. Yeah.
We're a good group here at this.
Okay.
Yeah, and mini driver can't get her, but you could have like a mini driver between inning contest where it's like kids. on, you know,
I'm just saying, if we want to stop the competition now and just go with my idea, I'm not gonna say no.
Well, but no,
Ben,
no,
Ben wrote
up
like
so.
Several
I
notes.
Don't think
on
so.
Disney.
I wrote a thesis on this. No, I was looking also at you know pop culture promotions, anniversaries, and I realized that 2022 is a big year for Sylvester Stallone, arguably the most popular. Actor in the entire world. I'm a big Sylvester Stallone fan, but 2022 is the 40th anniversary of First Blood, the first Rambo movie. It's the 40th anniversary. Also, big year for Sylvester Stallone, 1982. He had First Blood and Rocky III come out both in that calendar year. And then in 1987, a lesser known movie, but it's the 35th anniversary of Over the Top, his arm wrestling theme movie. And it's the 30th anniversary of 1992's Stop or My Mom Will Shoot starring Estelle Getty, which is definitely lesser in the canon, but another one you could have fun with. So I just thought about, let's just celebrate Sylvester Stallone at the ballpark based on those anniversaries and call it Over the Top Night with celebrate an Over the Top celebration of Sylvester Stallone. Not necessarily that we're celebrating the movie Over the Top first and foremost, but that's a good title, Over the Top Night. A lot of his movies are over the top. I could talk a lot about a lot of his movies, particularly First Blood, which I truly think is one of the greatest movies of all time in my top five. I understand it's not really family friendly. You don't want to really talk about a wounded, a psychologically wounded war veteran and being abandoned by your own country and ultra violence. I know that doesn't translate the ballpark, but Rambo is so well known in pop culture. And one little aspect related to Rambo specifically is there's that quote where he's talking to Troutman and he says, you know, they drew First Blood, sir. And I think when the opposing team, if they score first, not just on a Rambo night, but on any night, have the opposing team score first and on the video board, they drew First Blood, sir. Like now we're going wild, you know? Like, I just think that would work 100%. I was thinking, you know, maybe he's a survivalist. He can survive in any situation. You got some between inning contests, maybe who can, you know, pitch a tenth the fastest. So the Rambo wouldn't have a tent. He just build it out of sticks and leaves and whatnot. But there's only so much you can do. You know, Rocky III, I think there's more you can do with that. Of course, Eye of the Tiger montage scenes on the video board featuring the mascot. I thought a funny between inning contest would be, you know, at the end of the montage when Apollo and Rocky you know, they're training together, then they're on the beach and they run towards each other and jump up and down and kind of hug. I think it'd be good to get fans to reenact, do their best reenactment of that moment, to run towards each other and hug and see who is really has that best energy. You know, Mr. T lookalike contest, a Rocky lookalike contest. You know, there's motivational speeches for that movie that could play, you know, if you're down in the ninth inning, all sorts of stuff related to that. And then over the top, that movie's about arm wrestling. So I'm thinking, you have to sign up for this, and throughout the game on the concourse, there's an arm wrestling tournament. And then after the game, before the fireworks, because of course they're fireworks, there is the finalist for this arm wrestling contest. And then of course, you know, the fireworks themselves are Sylvester Stallone themed with, you know, various Rocky songs, Eye of the Tiger, of course, the theme song from Rambo, from First Blood that plays in the credits. I do believe later on Frank Stallone sings some of the songs related in the movie. And then of course you can get some Norm Macdonald clips going with, you know, you guessed it, Frank Stallone, which he always used to do on Weekend Update, that sort of stuff. And then Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. I don't know how much you can really work in there, but I was just doing a little research on that movie. One, it has a ridiculous plot in that Estelle Getty is his mom and she tries to clean his gun with bleach and ruins it. So then she has to go buy him a new gun, and she buys an illegal gun from illegal dealers. And one of those dudes get murdered in front of her. And then the dude who murdered this guy has to come after the mom. And I'm like, what kind of crazy movie is this? And Sylvester Stallone hates it. But the reason he signed up for it is because there were rumors that Schwarzenegger wanted the part. And he was like, oh no, that's my movie, not Schwarzenegger. And then Schwarzenegger was later like, yeah, I just said that, so he'd do it instead. Like, bam. Great, great movie. So I don't know how to work that in. I'm just getting too excited about Sylvester Stallone. But I do think we could have Stop or My Mom Will Shoot between any contests where they're like shooting water balloons at their children with a slingshot or something like that. Anyway, I was thinking a lot about Sylvester Stallone. That's all I got. I could just keep rambling.
You got to, right off the top of my head, I thought partnering with a some sort of a butcher, local butcher in shop, or in town, and have them bring out the frozen carcasses, hang those in a suite, or hang those in a concourse, and have fans, you know, obviously start working out, punch some frozen meat, and then if whoever does the best workout, I guess wins some meat from this butcher. I also thought of another Sylvester Stallone movie, The Expendables. That whole franchise is over the top as well. I know he's probably, I don't know if he's like the leader of that franchise, but that's certainly, I don't know if you can't incorporate, that's also a very violent, very violent series.
Yeah, I was running into
something. I don't know if that's that. Now that I said out loud, maybe not.
Yeah, I think you have to go with more of the kind of kitschy, campy side of Stallone, you know, at a minor league ballpark. There's a lot of dark undertones.
Oh, the Rambo, you know, dress contests and stuff like that. Have people come dressed as Rambo. You know, I think that you get a bunch of people walking around the ballpark looking like that. That's always a good time.
And plus, you said there was going to be maybe a like Sly Stallone or Mr. T lookalike contest. Doing a Sly Stallone soundalike contest, I think,
would be yeah, cool. I think
that'd that, be that good. Do that.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think of the mascot boxing. Maybe you can bring in a mascot from, you know, a local college, university, some set up some rival and have a mascot.
This is perfect for the Rumble Ponies. Their mascot's
he's got boxing
boxer.
Gloves on.
Yeah, doesn't he? This is perfect for Bingo up there.
I'd love to see Bingo take on all comers. I think we should see more mascot violence in general, but controlled mascot, referee mascot, work it out in the ring, fellas, ladies, whoever you may be, mascots.
Yeah, it's got on mascot crime.
Yeah. And I guess to wrap it up, I just say, if you haven't seen First Blood in a long time, watch it. It's a wonderful movie. And while Rambo later went on to be kind of identified with this ultra patriotic American jingoistic Reagan era tropes, that first movie has a lot going on. There's a lot of great societal commentary, and it's just such a great little B movie with great action scenes and outwitting the sheriff, and Brian Denny is great as a sheriff. And that movie is just a 10 out of 10 in my book, but I'm rambling now. Never mind. So I guess we can move on, and there's nothing else to say about Sylvester Stallone. talk to Tyler.
There's plenty to say about Sylvester Stallone.
There really is. But we should move on to Tyler Mon. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had an idea that I'm still going to throw out there, and it's going to be very self-serving. But when we were talking a little while ago, I came up with another idea, which is that somebody should just do outdated meme culture night, where you invite like the girl who is overly attached girlfriend, or the guy who is bad luck Brian, or like all of like the first generation of internet memes around like 2008. Track all those people down.
I love that. That could be, it could be like an education, like yeah. Educate Gen Z night.
Right. And these and TikTokers, and, but yeah, they don't like, remember you guys, scumbag
you guys
Steve.
Don't know what this, you don't know memes. You don't know what memes are. I was actually, it's funny that's really funny you mentioned that, Tyler. I was talking to a friend of mine who is of that Generation Z. And it was because there was a meme that went out on Twitter that involved the Pelicans and the Fireflies. And they were using something that I had just never seen before. And I screenshot and I sent it to a bunch of different people asking, what does this mean? And I sent out five, what does this mean? I got five, I don't knows. And that really scared me because I realized, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going on the internet anymore. But I asked this this friend of mine who is part of that Gen Z and thought that I was crazy for not understanding this. And, oh, you're so old and yada, yada, yada. And I said, yeah, listen, there's trends are quick, memes are quick. And she's like, this isn't a meme. I said, yes, it is. And she's like, no, it's lyrics to a song. I was like, you don't even know what a meme is. You know what memes are, but you don't actually know what a meme is. And that's when I got frustrated because I feel like that's me. That's the internet is like, that's ours. We grew up with that.
Well, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, I believe, is David Ratz's idea, the director of promotions there. They had the, I don't know what you call it, the Oma Gurr.
The Irma Gurr girl.
If you don't know what we're talking about here, I know it sounds weird, but they had that woman at the ballpark.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, that's incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah, how would you say that, Tyler?
Irma Gurr. It's like a girl, it's like for all those young pucks who are listening, I just combined bucks and pups. I don't know what happened there. Young pucks, this is a hockey podcast now. It was this girl, she was dressed in like a Girl Scout vest, and she had like big old-timey like 90s braces, and so the joke was that she had like the rubber bands on her braces, but she's holding up Goosebumps books by R.L. Stein, and the joke, the original meme, I think, was just a caption that said, Irma Gurr, Gershberms, and then it got transplanted into so much other stuff. But that's incredible. These people are real people, like Success Kid, the little tiny kid who's like pumping his fist. That kid's probably like 20 now. He would be thrilled, I would imagine, to have somebody track him down, or he'd be really annoyed.
We just mentioned like all this stuff on TikTok, and now you're seeing the TikToks of those people with their own TikTok accounts explaining the origins of why they're famous, like the blinking guy meme.
Amazing.
Overly attached girlfriend, and the comments, you read the comments, and it's kids now who are just mind blown. It's like they opened up a door to a secret world, and it's infuriating and exciting all at the same time, because you're finally like, you see what this, like, you see what we pay for you, it's like Drake after the Raptors won the finals championship. We built this. This didn't exist before you. We built this.
That is amazing. All right. This is my final idea. And this is the most tremendously self-serving one. We've been joking about this on this podcast. We've hosted this podcast since 2015. We've been joking about it probably since then. No one across the game of minor league baseball has done a salute to podcast night and invited the hosts of the show before the show out to be feted and celebrated at a game yet. And we're just devastated. And so I'm putting that on you now, Hunter.
This is your official invite.
We did it.
You actually blew the surprise. I was going to invite you guys as we were recording this here to get genuine reactions. Clearly, that was the whole.
That was totally
that was my long game this entire time. But if I still got spots that I need to fill on our promo calendar, if y'all want to come on down, we'll get you guys. You could record one from the mound if you want. record one during the game. We could do a live feed. Let's do it.
I know for a fact that there is now a Denver to Myrtle Beach nonstop, and those two guys in New York, you could easily get a flight down there. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Ben's been saying that he's coming down. Ben's been telling me that he's got to come back down ever since his trip a few years ago. So
I do. That's what I say to everyone every year.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, I should do that.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to clone me so I could be everywhere and bring the joy of me to as many people as possible. But Sam and I were talking about Tyler's idea earlier, and I do think podcast night, of course, we would like to be there. But, you know, you could also have some fun with it, I think, in the sense that there is that cliche fact there slash truth that, you know, everyone has a podcast. So I think any market could find a lot of podcasters, and be kind of funny to have everyone with a podcast throw out a first pitch and have like 27 people lined up there. But it also could serve as a networking and promotion event for the podcast, for podcasters to in the area to meet each other, you know, be guests on each other's podcast, because most podcasts are people from other podcasts talking about their podcast to someone with a podcast, and it, you know, kind of collapses upon itself. But I do think it could be a fun networking event that you poke a little bit of fun at, but also try to grow the audiences, you know, for these hosts and that come to the ballpark. And I mean, it's one of the most dominant forms of media right now. And I do think there is something there, all jokes aside.
In 2020, we had on our schedule, we had plans to do a Cubs blogger night. So something similar to this is, and, you know, we've kind of recognized that the there's about 4 to 5 blogs out there that are Cubs and Chicago sports based that, you know, we're very lucky to be part of that affiliation just because of that brand, and that, you know, their existence on the internet. So we thought, let's bring them all out and do something very similar to, you know, to this, to Tyler's idea here, and try to have them come on out. They could, you know, interview players, staff, fans, you know, do stadium reviews, food reviews. And we've had them coming ever so often. You know, guys like Evan Altman from Cubs Insider has been out. He's a big time friend of the program down here. And we've made him sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game and stuff like that. But our plan in 2020 was to try to do a Cubs blogger night and bring all of them out to one game, and try to cement ourselves as the favorite affiliate of the Cubs family.
Nice. Well, Hunter, I know you have a whole season to plan, and we've kept you here quite a long time. So unless you just want to keep talking with us, we'll do it forever. But otherwise,
let's do it. This is me getting all my filling out the rest of my promo calendar. We're about to move to podcasters. Ideas. We're doing Will Hunting, Goodwill Hunting now. We're doing Over the Top Night. We've got everything now.
All right, well, if you do Over the Top Night, I will be visiting Myrtle Beach for real. So there's your
legally binding contract right here. Two witnesses. Yeah, there you go. Well.
If someone says something on a podcast, then it is legally binding. Well, Hunter Hornstein, Director of Fan Engagement for the Myrtle Beach Pelicans, thank you so much for shooting the breeze with us, giving some insight into your job, giving us some feedback on our ideas. And if you haven't been to a Myrtle Beach Pelicans game, go meet Hunter and check out their entertainment experience. It's one of the best in the game. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, no, appreciate the kind words. Thanks, y'all. This was a lot of fun. And we'll see y'all again real soon.
This podcast to bring you another thrilling edition of Ghosts of the Miners. Now, here's your correspondent and host, Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to Ghosts of the Miners, in which all of you out there in Radioland must identify the legitimate historical ball club hiding amidst the fraudulent pair. One once tried to be king of the castle. The others are a bunch of monarchy. In the last segment, I asked you which of the following minor league baseball teams did at one time exist. A. The Diamond City Silver Sox. B. The Elysian Field Heroes. See the Baseball City Royals. You might think I'm jesting, but see the Baseball City Royals held court not two score ago. Playing in the Florida State League from 1988 to 1992, as an opponent, the Royals were more a benign formality than all-powerful rulers of the circuit. And it doesn't take a queen-sized intellect to surmise they were a Kansas City affiliate. More of an unofficial fiefdom than a sovereign municipality, Baseball City was in a town some 30 miles southwest of Orlando known as Davenport, part of the presidentially named Polk County. The stadium was owned and developed by an amusements company, which made it the crowning attraction of a boardwalk and baseball park on the former site of a Ringling Brothers Museum and Clown College. But boardwalk and baseball was no joke. Ted Williams, Don Drysdale, and Mel Allen were on hand for its opening day, in addition to its stadium being home to a Florida State League team and the spring training home of the big league club from Kansas City, the park featured a Wild West show, a wooden roller coaster, baseball carnival games and batting cages, items loaned from the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and a photography studio where for $5 American, fans could get their own baseball card made. One New Jersey man with the unlikely name Walt Johnson printed himself up as a Mets player with a .420 batting average. In the domain of the diamond, the Baseball City Royals were subject to many disappointments and could never quite claim the throne. In their inaugural season, they seized 79 wins in 139 games on the strength of Jeff Conine and Kevin Apier, but missed the playoffs and never again counted as many victories. In 1990, the theme park closed, failing to compete with the nearby Magic Kingdom, and after the 1992 season, the Royals exercised their divine right to relocate their affiliate to Wilmington, Delaware, where to this day the Blue Rocks reign, although they've since become an affiliate of the decidedly more democracy-themed Washington Nationals. And that was it for the dynasty of the Baseball City Royals. Now, on to the question for next time. Which of these sodden squads soaked up the good times in the minors of yesteryear? A. The Mount Clemens Bathers. B. The Colgate City Splash. C. The Fox River Dippers. Want to know the answer? Go jump in a lake. Or tune into the next Ghosts of the Miners. But for now, you'll have to excuse me. My producer, Ben Hill, is trying to learn to cross-stitch, and his questions are beginning to needle me.
Tremendous thanks, as always, to our old-timey news anchor, Josh Jackson, for joining the show and enlightening us on another illustrious chapter in the history of minor league baseball with Ghosts of the Miners. And we're just about set to close things up for this week's episode of the show before the show, but not quite yet, because Ben has something for us.
Well, I did something brilliant on Twitter this week, in case you haven't seen it. Twitter at Ben's Biz. You know, I've been watching a lot of Jeopardy the last couple of years, as we all have, I believe. Well, that's presumptuous. Anyway, you all know what Jeopardy is. One of the categories on Jeopardy is before and after, if you're familiar with that category, which combines two place names or people into one clue. And it hit me on Twitter last week. How about a minor league baseball before and after? So I threw a couple clues out there and then asked people to add their own, and they were a lot of fun. So my representative clue, or the one I dropped to get things going, if you guys did not see it on Twitter, I know you religiously look at all my tweets, but if you did not see them, then feel free to answer. But let's call this a $400 clue. A 1990s daytime talk show host that plays their games in a suburb of Cleveland.
Oh, Ricky Lake County.
Yeah, nice job. Nice job, Sam.
The Ricky Lake County Captains. That is correct. That is.
Do we have to do our responses in the form of a question?
Easily. Or this is... Yeah. Well, I have only two more written down. Okay. So, all right. Now, you guys, what do you want to do? Raise your hands. I'll call on whoever buzzes in first. This is one that was one of my favorites, even though I was not able to get it in the replies, it was a Twitter user @_steamed_hams, you know, a Simpsons reference, of course. But this Twitter user submitted this clue, which I think is a good one. White Sox affiliate in North Carolina that was an early 2000s emo band fronted by Chris Caraba, or Caraba.
That would be, well, I don't know how this would work as a, it's the Good Charlotte Knights.
Wow, that is not correct.
What?
But how well does that work?
No way.
A White Sox affiliate, so think of another White Sox affiliate in North Carolina.
There's multiple of them.
There so, are. There's yeah, three. There's three.
Is it the Winston-Salem Dashboard Confessional?
Correct.
Well, and that's why I knew mine was wrong, because mine was flipped. Because I had, because I had the team name second, and I was like, well, that could work.
I mean, nice there are work, probably a Sam. Lot of people yelling at their podcast device right now, just being like, Chris Caraba wasn't in Good Charlotte.
Right. That was,
yeah. I wouldn't have known that. That seemed like a very good guess.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known the guy's name.
You came up with a very incorrect, but nonetheless really viable alternate answer is, and this one's pretty easy. This is
because Good Charlotte wouldn't have been emo. They would have been more punk, but anyway.
Pop punk, yes. Yeah. But still, good, admirable guess, Tyler. Here's a pretty easy one. A hit song for Bonnie Tyler incorporating railroad terminology.
I don't even know Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah, I don't know if I know. Terminology.
I feel with railroad terminology, there are many possibilities. I don't know. Yard goats is railroad terminology.
Oh, you're on the right track there.
Okay. Who's Bonnie Tyler?
See, once I say this, you will know who she is.
Is it going to be My Milkshake Brings All the Boys to the Yard Goats?
That's an alternate clue we could have written.
But it's definitely, that's definitely not a Bonnie Tyler song, because I have no idea who Bonnie Tyler is.
The answer is Total Eclipse of the Hartford Yard
Goats. I've actually seen that music video a lot. For some reason, we watched that music video a ton in college. Huh. It's very surreal.
Interesting.
No, that's definitely somebody. We all know the song, but I didn't know the song.
Yeah, I'm a child of the 80s, and I had no idea who that was by. Those are great. Those are really challenging.
Yeah, there's a lot. If you go to Twitter at Ben's Biz, scroll through a little bit. Well, enjoy each tweet as you go. And then you'll get to me asking some of these on Twitter, and then a lot of great clues dropped in the replies. The reason I brought this up right now on the podcast is several people along the way said, oh, you should do this on the podcast. You should quiz Tyler and Sam. So I think this is a recurring thing we could do.
I like it.
Dropping these sort of clues. And of course, if you have any of your own, you can add to that Twitter thread. You can email me. You can email the Show Before the Show podcast. We're accessible, and we want to keep this rolling and have some fun with it, like we do with everything.
Maybe don't email, because if you email, Tyler and I will get them.
Oh, that's true.
True.
Email me. That okay, yeah. Like, yeah. All right. I am the quiz master. I am the host. Get in that touch with me either at Ben's Biz or Benjamin.Hill@MLB.com. Drop some clues, and then I can use those to quiz the very smart, agile, and well-learned Sam Dykstra and Tyler Mon.
Two guys who have definitely been educated at some point in their lives.
I'm sorry to all Dashboard fans. I'm so embarrassed by not even recognizing Chris Caraba and throwing out Good Charlotte there. But now we have another one that we could, build around the same exact premise.
Write that Good Charlotte Knights clue. Get it out on Twitter, man. We got to have some fun with it.
Oh, man, that is fun stuff. Well, a huge thanks, everybody, for joining this week's episode of the Show Before the Show, including Hunter Hornstein from the Myrtle Beach Pelicans and our very own Joshua Jackson. And for those dudes in New York City, Benjamin Hill and Sam Dykstra, my name is Tyler Mon, and we'll talk to you next week.